Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyCars.ie. Low-cost car insurance specialists. See how much you can save at InsureMyCars.ie.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
I bet you never thought you were going to be saying that this week after last week.
I didn't even know
when it was best of three or one frame in the final.
Exactly. I was laughing at myself during the week when we were texting. I was going, there he was last week, didn't have a clue how long the frames were, how many there were, whatever, and he goes and wins. Fair play to you. Well done.
That was great. It was fantastic, Reg, I must say. It was a great crowd, great atmosphere there, you know, and to be Jimmy White in the final, you know, as a 14-year-old, I used to, like, be an usher there, you know, like, yeah, taking tickets off people and putting them into, and I used to be cleaning out the dressing rooms as well. That was another job I used to have to do, and I used to clean out, I said it to him after the final, you know, I said, I used to clean out his dressing room all those years ago, you know, but to play him in the final was just magical,
and to beat him. In there.
I did, yeah, between himself and Alex Higgins.
Yeah,
I didn't know which was worse, but I once went into Alex Higgins' dressing room, and he had this lucky charm of a little leprechaun, and it was all going swimmingly well. He'd take the leprechaun out and put it on the table and have a glass of milk in front of the leprechaun until he lost. And then I went into the dressing room after he lost. Well, the head of the leprechaun was in one corner, right? The body was in the other. And the legs were in the other.
Yeah, and the milk was gone as well.
The milk was gone as well. Yeah.
Jameson instead, I can imagine. Yeah, no, listen, it was great. I was delighted for you.
That was fantastic. Yeah, it was great.
And great in front of a packed out Goffs as well. Crowd was great.
Yeah, it was absolutely. Yeah, it was standing room only. And it was televised on Channel 5. It was the first time they'd come over to televise it. And they reached, they peaked at 1.2 million viewers, would you believe, for the final, which was a huge audience for them. They were absolutely over the moon. I mean, so it was a great success all round. And I was sort of choking up at the end, you know, because it was quite, it was like, I got a little bit emotional. I didn't think I would, but I certainly, I did at the end.
I'm not surprised. Like you said, you know, you started out ushering in Goffs all those years ago, and then to come back and win a title in there. And I mean, you know, I remember watching the Masters there back in the day when we had the Benson and Hedges, I think it was called. Was it the Masters? It was.
Benson and Hedges, yeah.
What a place and what a venue. So you're bound to get a bit emotional going back after all these years.
I've had some great years there, you know. I lost actually in two finals, one to Stephen Hendry and then the second one to Ronnie O'Sullivan, even though after the final he failed the drugs test, you know, and he had to give me back the winner's check and I had to give the runner's up check. And he never spoke to me for about 6 months afterwards.
It's your fault, though, in fairness.
I know. Yeah. As I said, it was probably the most expensive sort of bit of marijuana he might have had for a long, long time. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, well, but that was his own fault.
Yeah, it's like, hardly, you know, your fault. I don't think you could be given out.
It's a magical place, Goffs. You know, and it's always great. It'd be great to have. It's great to have the seniors there, but it'd be great to have like a big like event, like a proper, you know, ranking event or even an invitational event back there. It would be, because the Irish crowd deserve it, you know. They came out and supported the event there last weekend and it was just truly magical, you know.
And what is the situation with that, you know, the Masters that we spoke of there going back in time? Where is Ireland in trying to have a big event like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just lost the sponsor, you know, that was Benson Hesh at the time. Yeah. Of course, it was the end of the tobacco sponsorship.
And that's all it's down to,
back
is
at
it?
The end. And it was down to, yeah, no other sponsor could be found, like, to support it, you know. I mean, it's quite a lot of money in TV, but, I mean, it was well worth it. I mean, RTE showed it live, you know, from 2 o'clock in the afternoon and 7 o'clock in the evening, and then the highlights after that. And it was, and every day, like, you couldn't get a seat in the place. It was magnificent, like, you know. So, yeah, I mean, if there was a sponsor found, I'm sure there's plenty of room in the calendar, the same calendar, to have a proper tournament televised and a big ranking tournament as well, you know. Even ITV were thinking of coming over to do the tour championship there, which is the top top 10 in the world, like, you know, and best of 19. They were strongly considering it, but I've sort of felt true. We're going to Manchester now instead. But yeah, it'd be great to have our own. We have one, of course, up in Belfast, but to have one in the south would be just as good. And there's no place better than Goff's, you know.
Absolutely. Okay, well, you never know. Someone might be listening. They might get a bright idea and something might come of it.
You never know. I
saw John Higgins. He was very close to that the golden ball in Saudi Arabia.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, it was a great success. The golden ball, he got down to the yellow and just overshot the black slightly. For those people that don't know what a golden ball was, well, it's a 147, but they put a golden ball on the ball cushion just below the D. And if they pot the golden ball, they would have got $500,000 and make a one. The golden ball was worth 20 points, so it would have been a 167. And he got down to the yellow. So there was only seven colours left, including the golden ball, for $500,000. But what happened was, after the event was over and Ronnie O'Sullivan beat Luca Brasile in the final, the Sheikh's right-hand man, who runs all the Riyadh season of sport, including the boxing that was on there last night, he came and he gave a speech and he said, because it wasn't won this year, for the $500,000, he says, I'm going to double it next year to $1 million if anybody gets it.
Clever. That's, and he says, I'm going to
a very, very clever. Yeah, and he says, I'm going to honour Mr. O'Sullivan. He says, we're going to build a big snooker academy here in Riyadh and honour Ronnie O'Sullivan's name, like, you know. So Ronnie was over the moon. Yeah,
that's incredible. Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
So yeah, it was a great success. Yeah. Great success.
Yeah, well, it seems to be when it comes to bringing sport. There's no stone unturned, as they say. They're chasing every single sport, and money will.
And it's great. We have a big ranking tournament here at the end of August, the first week of September, which will be the same prize money as the World Championship. So it'll be $500,000 for the winner, over $2 million in prize money.
Yeah,
which is exactly the same as the World Championship, you know. So that's going to be it's great for the tournament calendar as well, for all the other snooker professionals, because this last one last week was only an invitational, you know.
Okay, very good.
And but it was good. So
what else is on then? What's coming up in the snooker?
Well, I tell you where I am now. I'm in Dubai at the moment, in McGettigan's. We're celebrating St. Patrick's Day here in McGettigan's hotel and bar. Already, because it's Ramadan, you see, next week.
Right,
okay. So they can't celebrate it next week. So St. Patrick's Day is today, and they've started already from 11 o'clock right up until the match. The match tonight, of course, the Ireland rugby game is not until quarter to nine over here. So, but the celebrations and have already started downstairs.
So there'll be no rugby watch.
A nice Irish rugby shirt for me. I'll be wearing. So, I'm glad the interview was this time in the morning or this time in the afternoon. It's 12:30 over here. Well, just gone 12:30. So, if another 6 or 7 hours, Reggie, you know, I don't think the interview would have been a good idea.
No, and I don't think you'd be seeing much of the match if that's the case either, if it's starting already.
Maybe a sleeping bag might be better
for you than the jersey.
Yeah. But they've done a great job here. I mean, Dennis McGettigan, he's done an amazing job. They've kitted it all out. They have Monday over here. He's going to be performing later on as well. So, it'll be a great day, you know, completely Excellent. Different. All the places all done out, and all the St. Patrick's Day, bunting. So it's fantastic. Yeah, looking forward to it.
And when you get back in time for a bit of Cheltenham?
And you won't believe it. You won't believe it.
But
it's absolutely teeming. It's teeming out the heavens here.
You're joking me.
It's lashing rain. Yeah, you can't go outside. It's just pouring down. It's like a monsoon weather here in Dubai, would you believe? You know?
No, I didn't think it ever. Think it ever rained there.
There you go.
It's not much better here, I can tell you. But we'd be hoping for a bit of better weather now for Cheltenham. Will you get over to it?
Yeah. I won't get back for Cheltenham, unfortunately, but I'll be watching it, no doubt. We went to the races here last night in Maiden, the first time I was ever there, which was fantastic. And backed a few Irish jockeys who won. And it was really, it's just quite incredible. I think the building goes on for about a mile, almost a mile. That's how big the stand is. Yeah.
No,
they have the turf and they have the sand. It's just absolutely incredible. Yeah, it was a great experience.
Yeah,
but I'll be watching Cheltenham with an eagle eye, I'm sure.
Yeah, you sent me a video of it last night and I was thinking you weren't up in Leopardstown, all right. It was pretty incredible looking place.
No. Yeah. No, it was quite amazing, you know.
You've been watching any of the golf while you've been out there? I mean, Lowry's not going too badly.
Lowry is going very well. They were showing it last night when I came back on the big screen, and Lowry is doing absolutely brilliant. You know what, he could do with a good run, couldn't he? Because he's falling outside the top 50. So if he can do with a good run here and possibly win it, well, that will shoot him back up into the rankings and into all the majors as well. So it's an important week for him. But he's playing superbly well, I must say.
He's playing very well. I mean, I was disappointed for him last week. I don't think by his standards he'd say it himself. He didn't really have a great final day, you know. It just wasn't compared to everything else that he'd done during the week. So I'd say he'd be disappointed with that. But he's going well in the Arnold Palmer in Florida in the heat. No rain over there at the moment, that's for sure. He seems enjoying it. So hopefully, it'd be great to see him getting back.
Yeah.
We haven't seen much of him, you know. We just haven't seen much of him for a while.
No, I know.
Now to talk about the wonderful players we're going to be looking at later on this afternoon is the one and only Dan Van Zyl. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good in yourself, Reggie.
Ah, never better, I tell you. Looking forward to a day that you'd be well used to yourself, Dan, of standing on a sideline, watching young lads, having the time of their lives, throwing a rugby ball around the place and trying to knock each other off the ball. And, you know, there's a huge festival on down in Willow Park today, and I'm really looking forward to it. But some big stuff going on a little bit later on as well. But before I get on to the matches later on this afternoon, I have to go back and talk to you about last night. What a performance that was from the under-20s. It looked like they were gone and they kept going and managed to get that draw.
Well, isn't that the sign of a good side? They've done it against Italy where it looked like they going to lose that game, and they found a way to win. And last night, coming back twice, and the way at the end, England celebrating, running onto the pitch, and then Gavin, what a restart by the fly-off, and then Gavin, the centre, to go up and win that restart where everything then started, the pressure and so on. They just a very resilient side that just refused to die, and it was nice to see the English celebrating and then Ireland coming away with a draw.
I felt sorry for the English lads. My own belief was that maybe the advantage was over because they had gone through many phases. Take it.
You can't be sorry there. You know, we've had our bad decisions and all of that. So, but it's probably, you know, it is a talk of all referees, you know, when he's advantage over. And I think even this afternoon we're going to have a few decisions that's probably going to be questioned. But the resilience of that team and Evan O'Connell's leadership, and it's just a never die attitude, you know, the backs willing still to play. I mean, O'Connor was nearly over in the corner before that, you know, and could have scored, and luckily probably not, because then the conversion would have been a lot tougher, you know. So, it worked out. It worked out really well. But I must kudos to Richie Murphy and what he's done with that team. It was really great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned there, making the conversion a little bit easier. But I've been really impressed. That was a hugely physical English side. I mean, they're not, you know, these are men. There's no question about it. They're not young men. They're men. They were enormous, and they were much bigger than the Irish side. So physically, the way that the Irish lads stood up to it. But apart from that, I really do think we're seeing some stars of the future emerging from that entire setup there. There's some class, and Murphy himself, you know. I know there'll always be people going, his dad, it's awkward. It's a bit like Andy Farrell. But I thought he had a fantastic performance at 10. His crossfield kicking, his distribution, all of that. Definitely someone that we'll have to watch for the future from a 10 jersey.
Yeah, I know he had a weaker performance against Italy, but over the whole course, you know, he has been brilliant. And you know, there's such good tents. Every year we talk about the under 20 fly-off coming through, which is a great testament again to all the coaches down at provincial land and so on. And that's the strength, you know. Richie going to Ulster now, maybe he's got the confidence in bringing those last couple of years under 20s through in those setup and so on, because that's obviously the next part of their development now. But for me, the thing is, from back from years ago, the Ireland guys are so confident now in beating England and beating France, because they do it at an 18 and 20 level on a regular basis, where 10 years ago, you know, we always lost to those teams. Mm. And I think that is what reflects in the senior team as well. You know, Ireland go out with a real belief in they can beat anybody, because they've done it even at junior ranks for a few years.
Just to finish on the 20s, a question that entered my head last night, maybe might have crossed your mind, just with Richie going up north, all the talk of Billy Burns maybe moving out of Ulster and the need for a provincial 10 up there. Do you think there might be any room for maybe a little contract for Jack Murphy moving up north?
As you say, it will be awkward, but I think he's deserved of it. You know, just his performance, obviously still a World Cup to play this year as well in South Africa, where I think Ireland can do very well. And for me, it will be interesting to see. I'm not sure, does Richie go with them, or does he fully then with Ulster, and do they appoint a new coach? But this will probably be this team's challenge, is to go and beat the Southern Hemisphere, you know, the South African under 20 side, the New Zealand under 20 side, and so on, because they've done it with the other teams in Europe.
Yeah, okay. We'll see. We'll watch that space and see what happens. But it will be interesting to see if there is a contract available for that. Okay, let's get on to the senior game. 4:45 this afternoon, of course, we take on England in Twickenham. Never an easy place to go. In typically Irish fashion, all I'm hearing all week is, oh, this could be the banana skin and this English side, or, you know, they could be waiting in the long grass and all of the usual cliches and everything else you hear about it. I've never been more confident. I'm happy as Larry to be confident about this Irish team going to England, because I just don't think England are a team at the moment. I think they're a group of very good individual players, but I just don't think they're a team. And I think when it comes down to it, the Irish form and the way they're playing and the fact that they gel so well as a team will be the better of England, and I'm confident that we're going to get that victory. What are your own feelings on it?
Yeah, no, I'll agree with you. Although Andy Farrell has come out and said how many good individual players they have, their coaching staff, that's so good, you know. And like they had that performance in the World Cup semi-final where they nearly won. So they probably have a performance in them. But I also just can't see this Ireland team losing there. Me and you will both know we've had times in Twickenham where, you know, on the receiving end. So Twickenham is a special place, and it will bring a bit of it will make England a better side. But this Ireland side for me is just too established, you know, in selection and in the way they play, that I can't see an upset. Although around the bars in Twickenham, they've put up notifications apparently that it's the quarter final of the Six Nations, because you know, Ireland always lose in a quarter final, so that's their hope.
There's a little dig, you know, and I saw a lot of that on social media during the week, where you know, I think Jamie Heaslip came out and Peter Stringer came out, and they were talking about how confident they are in the Irish side, and straight away they were being lambasted for being overconfident and cocky, and the quarterfinal thing was thrown back at us. But yeah, look, I mean, that's the way it is. We haven't gotten past the quarterfinal, so but that's over, and at the end of the day, this is the next biggest competition. The Six Nations is what it is, and we're going for a Grand Slam. And you know, there's a bit of jealousy there. I don't mind them giving us a grief over the quarterfinals. There's a bit of jealousy there, but the fact that we're
No, I definitely think so, yeah, because Ireland have won 14, I think, out of the last 24 games against England. You know, we're going for a record consecutive Six Nations wins. You know, I think the previous record is 11. We're on 11 at the moment. So if we win, you know, it's the most Six Nations wins, and that includes Five Nations. So that in itself is special. You know, we can only talk about the World Cup every 4 years, but you play in a competition, the best competition that there is, and Ireland, I think, is just superior with Hugo Keenan coming back in, although Frawley had a very good game, but Keenan coming back in. I see England try to pick, you know, even bigger forwards with Chesham at six and so on, but I don't see how. I think our set piece, different from years gone by as well, is actually stronger than the English one.
And I look at their front row and you see the likes of Dan Cole still there, and you kind of wonder, Jamie George as well, I know, captain, but form not as good as it has been in the past.
Well, if you have to pick a World 15 right now, who of the English team will be in it?
Yeah, exactly. That's the question, you know. George Ford there at 10 as well. He's solid, you know, he's always solid. But Marcus Smith, for me, offers them something different. So if England are going to beat Ireland, they have to come up with something totally different in their game plan and in how they manage it and what they do. And I just find Marcus Smith the most intriguing player of all. And if I was going out to try to beat Ireland this week, he's the man I'd have in that 10 jersey.
I think so as well, but that's the confusion, looking from the outside in, that's the confusion that I have on their selection. You know, Furbank is an attacking flyer, attacking fullback, but yet Ford is more defensive territory flyer. So, you know, they play some attacking players and some territory players. They play some go forward. I just don't know if they totally sure of the way they want to attack. Obviously, in defense, they're very sure of they want to do now. And Felix, you know, they're still leaking a lot of points, but, you know, there's a definite change in the way they defend. But in attack, I don't know if they're sure how they want to play. And selection proves that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, when I look at our bench, I know the likes of Ryan Baird and Jack Conan in particular in the back row, I just feel we have more firepower coming on off that bench. Ronan Kelleher as well, playing fantastically well. We've got two props that can come in there in Healy and Bealham and can do a good job when they come on. And Henderson is always solid when he's playing for Ireland. So, I mean, it's a very strong bench as well that we're able to bring on. Whereas when I look at the likes of Joe Marler, you know, Danny Kerr, I'm just kind of saying, are they really going to bring anything, or are they just going to, you know, fill a bit of a gap?
Yeah, I will agree with you on that. Danny Kerr, 100 test matches, and we know how special that is.
Yeah.
And Elliot Daly, very experienced. But if you drop them out of the starting lineup, you know, there's a reason for it. And then they're not going to come and change the game if you're behind. And Danny Kerr also, you know, he probably won't control it as a Conor Murray will coming off the bench. If Ireland is in the lead, Conor will control the game and so on. So I think our bench is a lot more solid, and guys that can, if we're behind, that can really turn the game, and if we're in front, that can, you know, put the heat on even more.
Okay, well, we're both confident. That's a good way to be going to Twickenham, I have to say, and we'll see how it all unfolds. And as I said, I'm confident, you're confident as well, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully, no banana skins or things that go against the run of form at the moment. Speaking of run of form, I want to talk about France, and I feel Fabien Galthié is under tremendous pressure. I really do. He's made three changes, some force because of sickness to Tulagi, and Jalibert, Ramos moving to out half, that type of thing. They just, I don't know what's going on with France. They're just a bit all over the place. I expected them after the World Cup to bounce back into Six Nations and be a fantastic side that were going to be very difficult for us to beat, and it just hasn't been that way. They haven't really clicked. They've kind of limped along. They did get a result, I know, against Scotland, but it could have gone anyway in Italy and all sorts of stuff going on. So this one against Wales, it's a difficult one to call because Wales are that a bit of an enigma that even though on paper they're not up to much, club scene is in a mess, yet they can kind of pull out a performance now and again when they put on that red jersey. So what way do you see it going in Cardiff?
I'm not sure. because again, while exactly what you said there, I was very disappointed about France as well. I thought they'll kick on like Ireland did, but Galtier has made 8 changes, you know, from the Italy game. Mm. Three new caps, yeah, and 5 caps, other, yeah, guys coming in. So he's obviously feeling the pressure. He's trying to change something because the players that was on the pitch didn't deliver for him. So that could ignite France, you know, and it is all exciting players coming in. But in the Principality Stadium, Wales, they've lost 10 out of 11 Six Nations games, and a few of them were, you know, with one-pointers and so on. So they don't want to play out for a wooden spoon next week against Italy. So I think Wales will really be up for it. Gatland has also changed his side in picking Jenkins in the back row, probably to, they realized they were under pressure against Ireland in the set piece. So he's tried to recover from that. So I actually think Wales has definitely got a chance, and my prediction will be France by a lot or Wales in a close one.
Well, now it's time to turn our attention to GAA, and what a big week we have in the hurling, no doubt about it. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Sean Lane to discuss round 4 of the National Hurling League. And Sean, it's a full action-packed week, there's no question about it. And I suppose we start off Division 1A, that sees Clare taking on Kilkenny in a top of the table clash. What way do you see that one going?
Yeah, that's going to be a great game, Reggie, and they're 2 unbeaten sides. They've both got 5 points each, and funny enough, both teams drew with Wexford, so the form would be equally the same. Clare, look at will be kind of happier they got a good result in Wexford, because it is a good result nowadays. They got a draw the last day, probably could have won it. But what Clare are getting, you know, Clare are playing Limerick in the first round of the Munster Championship on the 21st of April. Right. They've one eye on that.
Yeah.
They're playing and they're unbeaten in the league, and even unbeaten in the league, they haven't played Tony Kelly, they haven't played Shane O'Donnell. So I think what Brian Lohan is really going for now, rather than having a really top class 15 or 16, he's trying to build that up to maybe 20 or 21 players, because the Munster Championship can be brutal, Reggie, to be honest with you. 4 games across 5 weeks with injuries, etc., etc.
Yeah,
so he needs all that. So I see them having a great chance. The game is at home, the smaller pitch. People in Clare don't like when that's said to them, but it can be a little bit smaller. Certainly looks a little bit smaller. I think it'll suit them. Kilkenny on the other side, Reggie. Derek Ling will be extremely happy. He's happy on a lot of fronts. He's unbeaten, which is one. He's had a really, really good performance against Cork, particularly in the first half. Great to see Mikey Carey back in the fold. O'Loughlin Gales have been beaten in the All-Ireland final, but Mikey Butler, Hugh Lawler, Paddy Deegan are now available to him. There's no sign of TJ Reid on the way back. So that's all the things that he has to add to his squad. And on top of that, on the playing front, the form of Adrian Mullen, for example, he's got 10 points, Reggie, from play in the last 2 games, home to Offaly and away to Cork. And they weren't just tip-over points, they were exceptional points over the shoulder. So his form is good. Owen Cody's form is really good. He's still a really, really good goal threat. So I think this is going to be a cracker of a game. I'm going to go with Clare, but by just a point or two, but I still believe that both Clare and Kilkenny will come out and reach the semi-final of the National League. If Kilkenny lose, they have a home game against Waterford, and we'll come on to the Waterford fixture next.
Yeah, well indeed we will, as Waterford are taking on Wexford. That Clare-Kilkenny game will be an absolute cracker of a match, can't wait to see that one. But as you said, Waterford against Wexford, and I suppose this is really a relegation game, because the loser will undoubtedly be playing in 1B next year, so a lot at stake for both teams.
Yeah, you're 100% right, Reggie. Wexford may have a second chance if they lose to play Cork, but I still think what you're saying is right, that the loser will certainly of this game, statistically and mathematically, if Waterford lose, I think they are gone, because they'll have lost the head-to-head with Cork, even if Cork lost up in Waterford. Waterford have a lot of injuries. They have a load of players to come back, and again, Waterford play Cork on the 21st of April in the Championship at home. Now, that's a game that they'll be targeting big time. They've Desi Hutchinson, they've Jamie Barron, they've Tadhg De Burka, all these players. Now, some of them mightn't make it back. I don't know what the story is, but there's an awful lot of really, really good players. Davy will be disappointed. He played in two top-class games. They lost to Clare by a point, and they were well beaten by Cork the last day, but they had a really big fight back. They got nothing out of the two games. One draw in the two games could have made a huge difference. On the other side, Wexford, look at under Keith Rossiter, they're performing really well. They're terribly hard to be beaten. I think I said it last week in the show. I don't remember a team drawing three National League games in a row. Mm. He's finding a few players. Jack O'Connor got the drawing point against Clare the last day from the middle of the park. Lee Chin is playing out of skin. Now, there's a little bit of a doubt as to whether he'll play in this game. There's an injury there. But he's also unearthed Seamus Casey, who got the goal the last day, Richie Lawler. So he's finding new players. I'm going to be bold here and say that Wexford are going to win this game by a point or two. Now, that'll put Waterford in a really, really bad situation. They won't want to be in it. Davy won't want to be in it. But Davy's real, you know, would be to try and stay in Division 1 and have a right cut off Cork at home in the first round of the Championship, which is on the 21st of April.
Okay. Well, in the last of those three games in the Division 1A, that team Cork that you mentioned are playing awfully, and I suppose it's fair to say that Cork would be favourites to win that one.
There will be, Reggie. There's no doubt about that. The one thing, and I said it on the show the last day, the time before that, that Conor Lehan, Patrick Horgan, and also Seamus Harnady, I mean, they're still to the fore, and there's a lot of these Cork players that came up and won the two under 20 All-Irelands in a row. They're not really, they're featuring, but they're not making the impact that they should be. Now, Jack O'Connor made a really good impact the last day, scoring 1-3. I do expect him to get over the line, but you have to credit Johnny Kelly with Offaly. The last day, they've drawn away to Wexford. The last day, they had a really, really good result. Up to half time, they were 6 points up against Kilkenny. But the second half, they just fell apart. Kilkenny outscored them 10-1 and fell apart. But what he is doing, he's bringing in Adam Screeny and Dan Ravendale, and so he's trying all these new young lads on the Offaly team. So there's a good future for there. They're my tip to win the McDonagh Cup this year, Offaly are.
Okay, very good. We'll keep an eye on that one. We mentioned Clare Kilkenny being a cracker, but the real game the weekend will be Limerick against Tip in 1B. That's on this evening, and that's one a really juicy game to look forward to.
It is, Reggie, because actually, this is funny, they actually meet again in the first round. Well, it'll be Tipperary's first round of the Championship, because they don't play till the 28th, but Limerick will be out the week before against Clare, but it's a game they'll be both looking at. John Coyley, he'll be happy. What he's done is he's brought the two Patrick's Well guys back into the team. Aaron Gillan and Keane Lynch are both back at start day, so that's a big, big plus for them. They're going well. I think that they'll go hell for leather. They'll want to put a marker down with Tipperary that, look, there's a little bit further for you to bridge a gap in beating us. They've huge and savage big players, you know, Barry Nash and Dermot Burns, Kyle Hayes. Now, he's not in the squad, funny enough. He's been left out of the squad for a day. But Tom Morrissey, Garrod Hegarty, they're just phenomenal. On the other side, Liam Cahill will be saying to himself, you know, I got this wrong last year. We started well. Even the year before with Waterford, he got it right, but they filtered out. They lost their last two championship games, so he'll be very cognizant of that. But I looked at their forward line. The team is picked. Like, they've Dan McCormack, Jason Ford, Jake Morris, Garrod O'Connor, who's having a marvellous league campaign. John McGrath's back in the side as well. Tipperary have a really, really good squad for tonight. There are no slouches at the back. You know, they've Michael Breen and Young Mar, the captain. So they're going to be really hard to beat. I think Tipperary will go full-blooded for this to say, look, at you know, we've 6 weeks to improve, but, you know, they want to really find out where they are now. And I'm looking forward to that match as well, Reggie.
Absolutely. Well, no better place to find out where you are than Limerick, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
They'll be put to the test. Okay, and another team that's going to be put to the test as well, Dublin, playing Galway tomorrow in Galway. That's not going to be an easy one for Dublin, to be honest.
No, Reggie, and a couple of things you'd have to say. Firstly, from a Dublin perspective, what we're looking for would be an improvement on the last day. They definitely, and didn't get good PR on it, they've definitely played well the first day against Limerick, and look at, they just fell away the last 2 or 3 minutes and they were completely outplayed the second half. So you're looking for an improvement. You know, Danny Sutcliffe played well the last day, Keane O'Sullivan, Donal Burke is back, Chris Crummy is back, so they're definitely improving. They need to, you know, last year in the championship, you might recall, Reggie, they were blitzed by Clare, but they still put up a really good score. The last day against Limerick, they put up 118 as well, which isn't a bad score. But they are conceding goals, they're conceding lots of points. That they'll have to go back and close down the space, and once they start doing that, now look at, that's a two-edged sword. They might do that and score less, but they'll need to do something with defence. I would put Conor Burke back into defence, and then when Owen O'Donnell comes back in, you're getting much, much stronger there. And it is great to see Donald Burke back. But Galway will just, they'll just have too much from Henry Shefflin is genuinely trying to find two or three players. I mean, he'll have Conor Cooney, he'll have Evan Nyland, he'll have, you know, Young Whelan or Conor Whelan up front as well. They'll just have too much, I would think, for the Dublin backs. That's what I'm hoping I'm wrong on, Reggie, but I just think that Henry Shefflin will be quite happy not to qualify for the league semi-final. I think Limerick and Tip will from this side of the draw, and he will be having his, you know, I think it'll be do or die for Henry Shefflin this year to try and get to an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people feel that that is in that team. Okay, and in the final game of 1B, Westmeath, they're playing Antrim. You would fancy Westmeath to win that one? Two good performances recently?
Definitely, Reggie. There's no doubt about that. And Gleeson in Antrim, I'd say, they're accepting the fact that they'll be playing 1B next year. I think Westmeath probably will end up doing so, but if you take Westmeath's last two games, I mean, they really gave Limerick a cracker of a game in Mullingar, and you know, Limerick laid in a late goal, albeit they won by 5 or 6 points, but a late goal to make it comfortable, I would say. But even the last day against Tipperary, Reggie, with 19 minutes to go, Westmeath were 14 points behind. They outscored Tipperary by 10 points in that period. Now Tip finished up with a goal to make it look more respectable and a bigger difference, but there was nothing in that game. Certainly Tip were the better team over the 70 minutes, there's no doubt about that. But when it really came down, when traditionally a Westmeath or, you know, an Antrim would throw in the towel or that, they really stuck. So great credit again to Joe Fortune. He's really getting the very, very best out of them.
Okay, well, that's going to be an interesting one to watch and see how they progress, because certainly not one of the names that'll be on the tip of your tongue when it comes to hurling. So good to see Westmeath putting in those performances. And next week, Brian Talty will be back to talk about round six and the ladies football for us. So look forward to hearing from Brian on that as well. But switching to Camogie now, and Dublin are to play Limerick in Division 1B this afternoon. How is the County Camogie team going at the moment?
Well, you'd have to say, Reggie, not great. They're in 1B this year. 1A is made up of the six traditional teams. Cork are out in front, and that they've two wins from two, and Clare are tailed off at the other end with two losses from two, with four other teams with 2 points from four. Dublin are in 1B this year, and they've two games played, Reggie. They had a very good win against Kerry. I think it was 2-14 to 9 points. They just came up short, Reggie, against Wexford, 2-15 to 17 points. But this is a huge game. Limerick are really, really going well themselves. Dublin are at home. The game is at 2 o'clock in Parnell Park. As I say, funny, one of the positionings, Aisling Marr for Dublin, the Vincent's girl, she's back at centre-half back. Orla Gray and Afina is centre-forward. So just to wish Gerry McQuaid the very, very best of luck. It's a 2 o'clock start. We could try and get as many people over to watch that game. They deserve all the support they can get. And, you know, there's some lovely players there. Aisling O'Neill at Castle Knockin, our own Grace O'Shea in Ballinteer, but you know, look at, they'll be up against the Limerick, Dublin will against Limerick, but sure, look at, let's see where it gets us.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.